Welcome to episode 39 of the Fredcast for the week of October the 16th, 2006. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. Welcome back to the Fredcast. In this week's news, results from the final two races of the Pro Tour season, the final Pro Tour standings, updates on a couple of suspected dopers. If you're on a bike, stay away from Angelina Jolie, free bike helmets, and much more. Following the news, a couple of follow-ups on some recent Fredcast items, how to travel with your bike, a couple of shout-outs, and of course, PodSafe cycling music. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Welcome back to the Fredcast. It's great to be back with you, and thank you so much for being patient while I took a one-week hiatus and recharged my batteries after Interbike and the MS-150, and I'll be telling you a little bit more about the MS-150 a little bit later, but in the meantime, thanks for sticking with me, and it's great to be back, so let's just get right into the news, shall we? Well, we finally reached the end of the pro racing season, and there were just two races since the last time that we met here on the Fredcast. The penultimate event, I love that word, it just means second to last, but it sounds fancy, doesn't it? The penultimate event was Paris Tours, and this one was won by Frenchman Frédéric Guesdon of the Française de Joux team, and he won the 255-kilometer race in 5 hours, 31 minutes, and 9 seconds, followed right on his heels by Kurt Arvizon of Team CSC, and he's Norwegian. Third place went to Australian Stuart O'Grady from CSC, fourth Tor Husoft from Credit Agricole, and in fifth place, Alexander Usov from the AG2R team. Now, the final race of the season, or I guess maybe we should call it the ultimate race of the season, was... Well, you know what? Before I pronounce it for you, because apparently I've been butchering it, as I have wont to do with lots of the European names that come up in cycling, why don't we let listener Paolo tell us all how to pronounce the name of this race. Paolo?
Dear David, this is Paolo, an Italian listener from Southern California. I love your show, but I really feel you need some help with the pronunciation of Italian events and names. So for this week is going to be the Giro di Lombardia, Lombardia from the Longobards. That's the place where I'm from, and I have strong feelings about it. Again, I love your show, and it's Giro di Lombardia. Thank you.
Thank you, Paolo, for that pronunciation lesson. We all know I need those from time to time. So yes, the final, or maybe I should say the ultimate race of the season, was indeed the Giro di Lombardia. How'd I do, Paolo? This year's race was won by Italian Paolo Bettini, and it was a bittersweet victory for the Quickstep rider, because although this was his second win in this race and his ninth overall in a cycling classic, he was still also reeling from the recent death of his eldest brother on October the 2nd. In fact, when Bettini crossed the line, he was visibly weakening as he pointed to the sky. And after the race, Bettini was quoted as saying, quote, "Today I was not pedaling alone. I will never forget this day." Second place went to Samuel Sanchez of the Euskaltel team, and third place went to Fabian Wegman from Gerolsteiner, with fourth place going to Christian Moreni of Cofidis, and fifth, David Rebellin of Gerolsteiner. Now, at the end of the race, it was obvious, and actually I think I told you on the last Fredcast, it was obvious that Alejandro Valverde would be the overall champion of this year's Pro Tour and win the white jersey, signifying the actual leader and champion of the 2006 Pro Tour. But Valverde did not take part in the event this year, and the reason for that was that he and his team had requested, or had expected, that there would be a jersey ceremony, a podium ceremony, for the winner of the Pro Tour at the end of the Giro di Lombardia, whether or not he won the race. And instead, the organizers decided not to do that, so Valverde decided that he would not take part in the race. So it's a little bit sad that he wasn't able to take part. And, you know, we can debate whether or not he should have taken part, whether it may have been sour grapes. I'm not quite sure how I feel about it. I can sort of see both sides here. Nevertheless, he is the champion of the 2006 Pro Tour season. And of course, we wish him our congratulations. Now, by the way, I think I should mention perhaps why it is that the organizers of the race decided not to have the podium ceremony for the winner of the Pro Tour. There's a little bit of back channel going on here, and the situation is this. We've talked several times and throughout the history of the Fredcast about the ongoing feud between the organizers of cycling's Grand Tours, Tour de France, Giro d'Italia, and the Vuelta a España, between them and the UCI, having to do with the Pro Tour, the calendar, the number of teams that are involved, all the things we've already talked about. Well, as luck would have it, or unluck in this case, if that's a word, the organizers of the Giro di Lombardia are the same people who organized the Giro d'Italia. So as a result of this rift between the two groups, the organizers decided that they did not want to give the Pro Tour or give the UCI the TV time by having a jersey ceremony. Now, unfortunately, this left the team stuck in the middle, as the teams have been stuck in the middle in this entire affair. And the team felt that this meant that their sponsor would not be getting the TV time that they deserved. And that is why there was this whole thing that went on where Valverde decided that he would not participate in the race. So we've talked about this before, and I really hope that sometime in the near future, the Grand Tours and the Pro Tour are able to work this out, because it really is just another, it's just another thorn in the side of professional cycling. It's really putting the fans and the teams in the middle of a really bad feud, and it's my hope that at some point between now and the start of the 2007 season, cooler heads will prevail and they will finally come to an agreement. We can just all hope. Okay, but in the meantime, let's talk about who did win the Pro Tour this year. Again, the individual standings, we all know first place went to Alejandro Valverde from Spain. Second place went to Samuel Sanchez from Spain. Third place, Frank Schleck from Luxembourg. Fourth, Cadel Evans from Australia. And in fifth place, Andrei Kazechkin from Kazakhstan. As far as the teams, Team CSC took first place. Second went to Coste Epargnier, Iles Baleares. And third went to Rabobank. As far as countries, I think it goes without saying, first place went to Spain, second to Italy, and third to Germany. I think it would be interesting to imagine what might have happened had Floyd Landis not have had his doping scandal and his issues, and if he had been able to finish out the season and retain those points in the Pro Tour standing for his finish in the Tour de France. I think it would be really interesting to see where he might have ended up, but unfortunately that is not to be, and as we're going to find out in a moment, that case just continues. So congratulations in the meantime to all of the leaders of this year's Pro Tour. It was an exciting season. It was certainly an interesting season. And, you know, the Chinese proverb that you'd be blessed to live in interesting times. Quite frankly, I'd like to see the 2007 season be just a little less interesting. Wouldn't you? So let's get to the current Floyd Landis situation and the situation with some other suspected dopers from the 2006 season. Floyd Landis has decided to do something very interesting and could be unprecedented. I'm not quite sure. Floyd has taken some of the critical documents in his case and he has posted them online for all the world to see. So there's a huge number of documents, most of them in French, from the lab and from the UCI about Floyd's test. Now, I don't speak French, so I haven't read any of those. There is also a legal document, Floyd's appeal, asking for the case to be dismissed. And then there's also a PowerPoint presentation which lays out Floyd's case as of right now. Now, I say as of right now because Floyd's doing one other thing. And by the way, there'll be a link in the show notes to where you can go for yourself, download these documents, and read them for yourself. I did it. I think that they were pretty interesting. But he's doing one other thing. Floyd has started participating in the discussion forums over at dailypeloton.com. And again, I've put a link in the show notes to that. And we talked about this today on the Spokesman podcast. We recorded it earlier today, and I should have that up online within the next 24 hours or so. And I may even insert that into the Fredcast feed so you'll have a chance to hear about it. But I had a chance to interview the publisher of the dailypeloton.com, and we talked about Floyd's motivation and what exactly Floyd is doing on the site. And apparently Floyd is going on there. I've read a lot of the posts. He's posting under the name Floyd, so it's easy to find him and search for him in the forums. He is not only answering his critics, he's also looking for assistance in mounting a defense. And so, according to the publisher of the Daily Peloton, he told me that there's doctors, lawyers, judges, chemists on there really studying the documents and getting into some very technical conversations on the Daily Peloton with Floyd and with others to try to help him mount a defense. Now, sure, there are other people on there who are criticizing Floyd and who are telling Floyd why they think that he's guilty. Floyd's answering all of them. Sometimes his comments are pointed and quite gruff. Other times his sense of humor really comes out. So if you're interested in conversing with Floyd about the situation, I'd recommend that you click the link in the show notes, go over to the Daily Peloton, and have a conversation with him. And by the way, if you do that, I'd really appreciate it if you wouldn't mind letting people know that you found the Daily Peloton through the Fredcast or through the Spokesman, because that's going to help us here as well. Meanwhile, of course, as you can imagine, the head of the UCI, Pat McQuaid, is hoping that the case against Floyd will proceed in a little bit more haste. He, according to an article I read in the San Jose Mercury News, he wrote an email saying that if things don't move faster with USADA, the United States Anti-Doping Agency, or with USA Cycling, that McQuaid and the UCI might bring charges to the Court of Arbitration for Sport. And as we've talked about here before, that is the governing body that has the final word in disputes of these types. So McQuaid's getting impatient. I think that sometimes the wheels of justice do move slowly, and I think that there's a reason for that, so that we can make sure that people do get a fair shake, that they're able to get their day in court, that they're able to receive all of the evidence and be able to make their case. So I don't have a problem with it proceeding in a little bit slower fashion, because I think that everybody has a right to have a fair trial, and if that's what's necessary, then that's what they should do. So I don't know whether or not McQuaid is going to really go to the Court of Arbitration for Sport or if he's just spouting off. It really doesn't matter. I think that it's interesting what Floyd is doing, and we'll see where it goes. So go ahead and take a look at the documents, take a look at the Daily Peloton, and be sure to let him know that you heard about it here. So shifting from Floyd and his Tour de France woes, a couple of figures in the Operación Puerto scandal, the Spanish doping scandal surrounding Eufemiano Fuentes from Spain, a couple of figures are still in the news. One of them, Ivan Basso, and of course the other, Jan Ullrich. But let's talk about Basso first, because finally, a little bit of good news when it comes to this whole scandal and all this doping stuff that we've been talking about. The Italian Olympic Committee ruled last week that they basically had no case against Basso, that the information that they received from Spanish authorities in the Puerto affair was insufficient to come to any sort of conclusion or bring charges against Ivan Basso. As a result, Basso is free to race. He's free to return to his CSE team and get back on the Pro Tour circuit. So for a little while last week, at the end of last week, there was some speculation that Basso might actually take part in the Giro di Lombardia. And actually, according to a news report that I read, he begged Bjarne Riis, the director sportif of Team CSE, to allow him to race in the Tour of Lombardy. But instead, according to a report that I read, quote, "Bjarne told me it was not an ethics-driven decision, but a sporting one. He told me, As we don't know what will happen in 2007, it would make little sense for you to take part in the final race of the season with CSC. And then Basso went on to say, it's he who decides, and it's he who's boss. So I'm sure that Basso was overjoyed at the fact that he's been cleared to race, but at the same time, I'm sure he was just a little disappointed that he couldn't take part in the Tour of Lombardy. Hopefully, he'll just continue to train, as he has done, according to reports. He's continued to train even after he was barred from taking part in the Tour de France. And we will see him in 2007. And I think, as always, he's going to be a force to be reckoned with, especially in the Grand Tours. So good news for Basso. Meanwhile, while we have a good result for Basso, Jan Ullrich is still out there hanging. He is still subject to disciplinary charges and continuing hearings by the Swiss Cycling Federation. Now, it was hoped that this Basso decision might affect Ulrich's affair in a more positive way, but instead the Swiss Cycling Federation has vowed to continue the disciplinary hearings against Ulrich. And one of the problems here is that while they have the documents from the Spanish investigatory authorities, they're not able to use those documents in their disciplinary hearings until the hearings and the court case in Spain are settled. Now, this is according to a new judge in the case in Spain who is taking over for the original judge while the original judge is out. It is entirely possible that when the original judge comes back that he may reverse the decision. But until then, Ulrich is waiting because the Swiss cycling authorities cannot go forward until they have the approval to release these documents and to use them in their case. So Ulrich waits. In the meantime, there is, of course, a public health trial in Spain against Dr. Eufemiano Fuentes. Then, of course, you'll all remember that that's the former Liberty Seguros team doctor, as well as the manager Manolos Saiz. And their case, according to newspaper reports, should last until at least June of 2007. Let's hope that the cases against a lot of these riders do not have to wait until those cases are over. Keep you updated here on the Fredcast. So from the European Pro Tour to the American Pro Tour. That's right, the American Pro Tour, because USA Cycling recently announced that they are going to be creating in 2007 the country's first US Pro Tour. They're going to be calling it the USA Cycling Professional Tour, and of course that's going to be US Pro Tour for short. Here's what's going to be happening. Beginning in 2007, all elite men's events on the UCI calendar that are held in the United States, plus three USA Cycling Professional National Championships, will all be part of the USA Cycling Pro Tour. And according to the press release, the goal of the USA Cycling Pro Tour is to acknowledge international competition in the United States and to spotlight events that have made the commitment to host world-class UCI-sanctioned races that feature UCI-registered professional teams and athletes. I think that this is great because, as we saw this year in 2006, with the popularity of events like the Tour of Georgia, the Tour of California, we're seeing some of the top racers in the world now come to the United States, and this is unusual for us, to take part in these events. And so this is a way for USA Cycling to recognize that and to encourage more top-end professional racers to take part in the races here, because at the end of the season, they will be crowning, just as we did in Europe with the Pro Tour, they will be crowning a champion of the U.S. Pro Tour. So I think that this is a great thing. It should really ratchet up the amount of competition that's at races in the United States, and hopefully it will also be a shot in the arm to the promoters, because it may mean more sponsorship dollars, therefore better races, of course, and it also hopefully will mean more spectators, more spectator involvement. I think all of that is only a good thing for professional cycling. So the USA Cycling Pro Tour will kick off February 18th with the Amgen Tour of California. We'll go all the way through the year, including races like the Tour of Georgia, a lot of those races in Pennsylvania that we all know so well, and finally ending September 15th with the Tour de Leelanau in Traverse City, Michigan. This is going to be really an exciting year in 2007 for cycling in the United States. I'm really, really looking forward to it. Well, if you're on two wheels, doesn't matter if it's a bike or a motorcycle, and you're in India, and you're anywhere near Angelina Jolie or her entourage, because they're there filming the movie A Mighty Heart about murdered Wall Street Journal reporter Daniel Pearl and his wife. Jolie is playing the widow in the movie. If you're anywhere near these people in India, get off the streets. Because first, as if it wasn't bad enough, Angelina Jolie's car knocked over a cyclist while trying to dodge paparazzi. It was 19-year-old Mital Rawat who was hit and knocked off his bike. Thankfully, he's going to be okay. And then a day or so later, a couple of the people from Jolie's entourage hit a couple of people on a motorcycle in India and then sped off. So they were involved in a hit and run. So again, if you're in India and if you're on two wheels and you see these people coming, get off the street. Okay, before I give this next story, I have to thank a couple of listeners, listener Patrick and listener Steve, for sending me the links to this story. This has to be one of the coolest car accessories, the most Fred car accessory I've ever seen for cyclists. General Motors has developed and is releasing in Europe one of the coolest bike racks I've ever seen. Now, for most of us, if we want a bike rack on our car, we've talked about this here before. You put it on your roof, or you put it on your trunk, or it goes into the hitch receiver on the back of your pickup or SUV. This one is even better. This one is a bike rack that is a part of the rear bumper, but when you're not using it, it folds up and tucks inside the rear bumper. And when it unfolds and comes out, it even includes another license plate frame so that when your bike is blocking the license plate on your car, anybody behind you can still see your plate. This thing is really cool. It's currently only available on the European versions of the Opel Antara and the Opel Corsa, but it looks like it's going to be in the United States on what will soon be the Saturn View. Now, this is according to reports that I've read. Don't quote me if you go down to your Saturn dealer and you can't find this as an option and they have no idea what we're talking about. But just in case you're interested, I've posted three links in the show notes where you can see pictures of this thing. I'm telling you, this is a really cool bike rack and something that I hope one day is available as an option on every car. Click the link in the show notes. I think you'll agree. And finally, and maybe the gentleman in India who got hit by Angelina's car might be interested in this, if he can get himself to Tucson, Arizona this weekend, he, as well as you and your kids, can get a free bicycle helmet. And these bike helmets are being offered for children and young adults. And they're also going to be offering helmet fittings and safety tips. This is going to take place from noon to 4 p.m. October the 21st in Tucson, Arizona at the Tucson Mall at 4500 North Oracle Road in the southeast corner of the parking lot. There's also going to be a professional bike stunt rider, Rich Weber, who will talk to kids about bike safety. And if you want more information, you can contact Don Turnage of the Brain Injury Association of Arizona at 602-508-8024. This is being sponsored by the Tucson Citizen, and that's also the Gannett Foundation. And sponsors include the City of Tucson Department of Transportation, the Tucson Police Department, and private medical rehabilitation providers. Why am I mentioning this on a show that goes around the world? Well, quite simply two reasons. One, if you're anywhere near Tucson and you, if and your kids or the young adults in your family don't have bike helmets, please get yourself down to the Tucson Mall this weekend and get helmets. There simply is no greater gift you can give to your kids if they've got a bike than making sure that they have a helmet on their head. Brain injuries are not something to fool around with. Just ask Saul Raisin. But I'm also mentioning it because I think that this is a fantastic public service. Not everyone can afford a helmet. Not everyone can afford to go out and buy a new helmet when they fall and their helmet gets munched, as we've talked about here on the show before. So I think that if I'm mentioning it here because there's a lot of you out there that are bicycle advocates and that are involved in bicycle safety. And if there's any way that this program can be a model for others around the United States, around the world, that is why I'm mentioning it here. So a special thank you to all of those sponsors. I mentioned them for a reason, because I think that they should all, have our gratitude for what they're doing, because they're doing a service to the public. And I'm hoping that this will serve as an example to other cities and other places around the world to do the exact same thing. So kudos to those sponsors for providing the free helmets to the kids. And that's going to do it for the news for this edition of the Fredcast for the week of October the 16th, 2006. Okay, well, before we get to tonight's main feature, which is how to travel with your bike, primarily how to pack your bike for travel, a couple of housekeeping notes that I want to go over. First of all, I've gotten some great email feedback from many, many of you saying how much you really enjoyed the shows that I did from Interbike, both at the outdoor demo as well as on the trade show floor. And what you really loved were the interviews and the product reviews and my take on a lot of that. And I think that's great. And I want to do more of that. I want to do more product reviews. I want to bring you more product that I think that you'll be interested in. And so I've already contacted a lot of companies and I've got a lot of great things planned for the future here on the Fredcast, so that this section of the show, what I call the features section, has a lot more useful information for you, both in some tutorials and tips and tricks that I'll be bringing you, but also in some product reviews. It's important, therefore, that, and I got this tip from listener Jim in Dayton, Ohio. Thank you, Jim, for sending this to me in a voicemail. It's important that when you patronize the companies that I talk about on the show, that you do me the favor, do all of us here on the Fredcast community a favor, let the company know that you heard about their company, you heard about their product here on the Fredcast. If you do that, it will show the companies that the Fredcast has value, and it will give them an incentive to send more products for reviews and for giveaways in the future. So please, from now on, if you would do that, and I'll be reminding you from time to time, when you call up that company, if you get somebody, and hey, it's possible, although not probable, they might not have even heard of the Fredcast. Do a little evangelism as well. Let them know you heard about the product on the Fredcast, you heard about their company on the Fredcast. It's going to help all of us in the long run, so I'd appreciate it if you do that. Now, next, I talk about it a lot here on the Fredcast at the end of the show. I tell you that one of the ways you can contact the show is by using the Fredcast forums. And one of the reasons that I set that up, and perhaps the primary reason I set that up, is that I know that I sometimes can get a little bogged down both in Fredcast work as well as my day job and my family, and I can't respond to your emails as often as I would like to. And although I do try to respond to everybody, sometimes your emails can be a little bit delayed. That's why I set up the Fredcast forums, so that if something comes up and you want an answer to a question and you need it quickly, you know you can go there and you're going to find other fellow Fredcast listeners who are going to be able to give you some advice on your question. Well, one of our most prolific contributors to the forums, and somebody who's been there since day one, somebody that you know on the forums as Plow13, contacted me recently and said, "Hey, David, we've got a problem. We've got some spam. We've got a little bit of abuse going on, and we need to clean that up." And he graciously volunteered to be our moderator. So thank you to Rick for doing that. I really appreciate that. He's going to be our moderator. He's going to be keeping all of us safe from flame wars, from abuse, and most importantly, from spam. So if you haven't had a chance to check out the Fredcast forums, go to the website, click on the forum link, and I think you'll find a really great user community there of people who are fellow Freds like yourselves and will be very happy to help you with any questions. And just, it's a community of cyclists, and I hope that you'll enjoy that. So thanks to Rick for being our moderator there, and thanks to all of you who participate in the forums at thefredcast.com. Next, I want to give you a quick update on The MS-150 that I've talked about here on the Fredcast several times over the last couple of weeks, this is a big event for me every year. I'm the chairman of the planning committee, and again, it's the Land Rover Miramar MS-150 Beta Bay Bike Tour, and it goes to benefit the Pacific South Coast chapter of the National Multiple Sclerosis Society. I've told you to death that I have a deep and abiding commitment to the mission of the National Multiple Sclerosis Society because my wife has MS, and many of you graciously donated to my efforts to raise money for the cause. Fredcast listeners brought in over $1,000. I am very, very grateful to you for doing that. So I thought I'd just give you a quick review of how the weekend went. It was a gorgeous weekend here in Southern California. Started off on Saturday morning very early in Irvine as we started for the Century. We started at 7 a.m., whereas the regular riders, the people who were doing, it's about a 60-mile ride, they started off a little bit later. But we started off at 7 a.m. It was just a little, there was a little chill in the air, but otherwise it was going to be a gorgeous day. And the entire day was just beautiful as we headed down the California coast with the Pacific Ocean on our right-hand side, down into Carlsbad where we had lunch, and then inland into North County, San Diego, into some of the rural portions of North County, San Diego for just some gorgeous riding and some really beautiful back roads. And then turned back north once we got to the coast and back to Carlsbad for a great overnight party with some bands and dancing. I actually had to give a speech that night, and I was very happy to present an award for the most inspirational rider on the tour. We had 2,000 cyclists, and we gave an award to my friend and fellow committee member, Michael Plumley, who is an inspiration to us all because he has MS, yet he's able to ride about 4,000 or 5,000 miles a year. And as a matter of fact, he also participated in the MS Global event in Europe, riding for a week with Tyler Hamilton for the Tyler Hamilton Foundation, which benefits multiple sclerosis, doing some of the most beautiful yet some of the most difficult climbs in Europe. So that was fantastic. And then on Sunday, on day two, the entire group of 2,000 of us rode from Carlsbad, California, down to Mission Bay near SeaWorld for just a fantastic barbecue lunch. We raised over $2.3 million for the cause. You Fredcast listeners were definitely contributors to that. I really appreciate it, as does my wife, Donna. So thank you so much for doing that. And I think Donna wants to say just a couple of words to you.
I do have a couple of words to say. I want to send a final shout out to the following listeners for their generous support of your ride in the MS-150 last weekend. Darren, Davis, David, Gary, John B., John N., Jonathan, Lawrence, Ken, Michael Z., Michael P., another Michael P., Michael S., Mike, Robert, Simon, Stephen, Vincent, and Ward. Thank you so much for your support of the ride, David, me, our family, and the Fredcast. Now back to David.
So let's talk about traveling with your bike. Now, we've talked here on the Fredcast in recent months about traveling and renting bikes. And one of my biggest complaints about that, well, I have several, and I'll tell you what they are. First of all, trying to find a bicycle rental shop in the city that you're visiting is very difficult and time-consuming. Trust me, I know. This is something that I do all the time when I travel on business. There simply is not a single place that you can go to find information about bicycle rentals all over North America, certainly not all over the world. And even when you do find a shop that rents bicycles, until you get there and take a look at the bikes that they have available for you, no matter what they say on their website, you still don't know what you're getting. Now, there are a couple of exceptions. I've certainly rented bikes from companies where I got there and I was overjoyed with what they rented me. One example was something that I've mentioned here on the show before, when I got to Maui and they rented me a top-of-the-line titanium Lightspeed with Dura-Ace components. That was fantastic, and the price was unbeatable. So it was a great ride, obviously, in a great location, and I really enjoyed using that bike there. But sometimes somebody will tell you that they have a high-end race quality road bike, for instance, and when you get there, you find out that it's an old chromoly frame with less than Sora components, and the thing hasn't seen lubrication or grease in 3 years, totally rusted, you can't adjust it, you get the picture. So what's better than traveling with your own bike? Sounds fantastic, like a great thing to do. The problem is that it can be a bit daunting, and it can certainly be a hassle. So I'm just going to spend a couple of minutes and give you some tips from somebody who's traveled with a bike several times, more than several times, of some things that I've learned about traveling with a bike. Well, the first thing that you need to decide is, would I like to ship my bike to the destination, or would I like to bring it with me on the airplane when I travel? Positives and negatives to both. So let's talk about that. First of all, let's talk about shipping. Obviously, when it comes to shipping, the first thing you're going to need to do is find an appropriate container that is shippable. So it depends on whether you're using Federal Express or UPS or DHL or Airborne or any of the other services out there. You're going to need to make sure that the size of the container in which you put your bike is allowable by your carrier. So, of course, you got to go to the website or call their 800 number and find out what their dimensions are and make sure that your container fits within those dimensions. We're going to talk about containers in a few minutes. Another issue that you need to consider when it comes to shipping your bike is that you got to remember that if you're leaving on a Friday, for instance, and you want to be able to ride your bike on Saturday, depending on where you're going, you may have to ship your bike the previous Monday. So if you're like me and you're riding your bike almost every day or every night, remember that if you ship your bike, you're going to be without your trusty steed for several days, up to a week or two, depending on how far away you're going. So that's another factor that you need to consider when it comes to, do you want to ship your bike? And finally, another factor that I consider when it comes to shipping my bike, in my day job, we receive a lot of packages via almost every freight company you can think of. Sometimes those packages come in looking like they're perfect, looking exactly the way they must have looked when they were shipped to us. In other circumstances, well, unfortunately, we have to make an insurance claim with the shipper. Now think about it. I don't know how much you've spent on your bike. It may be your only bike. There is always the possibility when you ship something and it has to go through multiple hubs, get off of one truck, get onto another truck, get onto an airplane, get off that airplane, go down a conveyor, you get the picture. There's always the possibility of damage. Now, certainly, there's also the possibility of damage when it comes to shipping your bike via the airlines. But the containers that you're going to use, and we'll talk about that again in a minute, are different when you're shipping via the airlines versus when you're shipping via most freight carriers. So typically, you may be able to get a lot more protection from a case when you ship via an air carrier. Finally, the last thing that you need to consider when it comes to shipping your bike with a freight company is the cost. So consider the size of the container, consider the weight of the container plus your bike plus whatever else you put in the box, whether it's your helmet or your shoes or your cycling clothing, and then go on that website and figure out what it's going to cost you, including insurance, of course, to ship your bike via that freight company. Figure all of that out, and then let's talk for a second about shipping via the airlines. Okay, shipping via the airlines obviously has the benefit of the fact that your bike doesn't leave your possession until you get to the airport and check it in. So you're able to ride it even up to the night before your trip. Also, there's a lot more choices when it comes to the container in which you're going to put your bike. And my opinion is, a lot of these containers are a little bit better padded and better able to protect your bike than the size restricted containers that you would use if you were using a freight company. Couple of downsides. We've all seen the commercials with the ape who's throwing that Samsonite luggage around, and he's supposed to represent the average everyday baggage handler. No offense to those of you out there that are baggage handlers, but we've all had issues where we've gotten on a plane with our checked baggage, and we get to the destination, and that checked baggage doesn't look quite as good as it did when it left our hands at the airport when we left home. So you need to think about that as well when it comes to your bike. Also, the airlines will charge you for putting your bike in their hold, anywhere from $50 to $80, depending on the airline. And I've put a link in the show notes to a great resource, a great website at the League of American Cyclists, where they've listed from some of the most major airlines, at least in the United States, what their policies are when it comes to shipping a bike. And if you don't mind, I mean, to get a little bit politically incorrect here, it's always bothered me that I get charged for traveling with my bike, but that golfers don't get charged and skiers don't get charged and surfers don't get charged for traveling with their sporting equipment. In a lot of ways, some of those other pieces of sporting equipment, and by the way, I am a surfer, at least I was once. I am a skier. I don't golf. I'm proud of that. And so I do travel with skis. I've never traveled with a surfboard, but it bothers me that I have to pay $50 to $80 to each way, by the way, to travel with my bike, and these other pieces of sporting equipment don't get charged. Be that as it may, I know that I'm going to be charged when I go to the airline. So these are some of the things that you need to consider when you decide, would I like to ship via a freight company or would I like to ship it with me on the airline? Great thing is, you get to the destination with your airline, your bike comes out into the oversized luggage area. Don't look for it on the carousel. It's not going to be there. And you're ready to go for a ride really within 20, 30 minutes after you put your bike back together. So that really is a good thing. Now, if you are going to travel with your bike, and I know this sounds like a no-brainer, but oftentimes people forget about this. Let's say you're going to a great vacation destination. And what does everybody want to do when they're on vacation and it's sunny and they really want to enjoy the weather? They think about renting a convertible. Well, where are you going to put your bike if you rent a convertible? It's not going to fit in the trunk because most convertibles have tiny trunks. It's not going to fit in the back seat because very few convertibles have decent back seats. So think about bringing a bike rack with you. One of the things that I do when I travel, and by the way, I'll just tell you that when I travel with my bike, I always ship it with me in the airline. I just feel better about that. I feel that the case that I use offers me better protection, and I'm able to ride my bike up to the night before. So one of the things that I also do is I pack a bike rack with me, usually a trunk mount, something that a lot of times, depending on the bike case that I'm using, I might be able to fit into the case with my bike. So think about bringing a bike rack with you, so that when you get to your destination, you can actually carry your bike with you. So let's talk about some of these cases that are out there that you would be able to use, whether you're shipping or whether you're going to take the bike with you on the airline. So let's look at just a couple of the cases that are available to you out there for shipping your bike, whether it's via the airline or via a carrier like UPS or FedEx. There's several cases available, but I'm just going to give you a couple of examples here of some of the ones that I know about and that either I've used or have come very highly recommended. The first case comes from a company called Bike Pro USA. And again, links to all of this are in the show notes. And the ones that I've used in the past, they call the race case. Now, this case is it's not a hard shell case. It's a soft shell case. They call it the most compact, versatile travel case on the market. They're available in regular size, oversize, and in double size, where you're actually able to put two bikes in the same case. Now, like I said, these are not a hard shell case, but according to Bike Pro, this case with its very, very thick padding will absorb most impacts that might occur to a case. Now, I used to use these cases when I was in the bike industry, and we were literally traveling every weekend to a different Norba National mountain bike race in various parts of North America. And we were taking bikes with us to ride, as well as bikes with us to display in our booth. This was in the days before we had a box van, and so we were flying everywhere and bringing our bikes with us. And in several seasons of doing this with the same double race case, we never experienced any damage to our bikes. And, you know, these were titanium bikes, these were carbon fiber bikes, never had any damage, and they always showed up looking as good as they did when we packed them up the night before we traveled. They come with a couple of wheel cases, and the way that they work is you have to take the handlebars off the bike, the pedals off the bike, and the seat post off, as well as the wheels. The front fork and the rear triangle are affixed into the case using the quick release skewers. And the great thing, by the way, about the double case that I mentioned a few moments ago is that in most cases, when you travel with the double case and you show up at the luggage counter, to them, it looks like it's just one bike. So you're able to save on your shipping cost, that $50 to $80 I talked about a few minutes ago. So that's another great thing about these cases. That's Bike Pro USA, and I think that they make a really nice case. I've used it before, and it's something that I would certainly endorse. Next is Trico Sports, and they make a really nice case as well. The difference between the Trico and the Bike Pro is the fact that the Trico is a hard shell case. It is a little bit smaller than the race case. And in some cases, depending on the size of your bike, and I know some people with mountain bikes have had this issue, they've actually had to remove the fork from their bike in order to get it in the case. Nevertheless, this is a bomb-proof case. It is really able to stand up to all of that gorilla abuse I talked about a few minutes ago. So another really good case to consider for your airline travel. Now, in addition to these cases, there are also a couple of box type cases that I'd like to tell you about, which have gotten amazing reviews and people have sworn by these as well. Maybe you don't travel that often with your bike, and maybe it's something that you don't want to spend $200-$300 on a case, as in the previous cases I just mentioned. There are two box type cases that I've looked at and that people have said that have had very good results from. One is from a company called CrateWorks, and they actually have two. One is a corrugated cardboard and the other is like a corrugated plastic. From what I understand, they are shippable as well as being able to be shipped via the airlines. The second one is one that I hadn't seen before I did the research for this story, and it's from a company called Air Caddy. It's a very innovative looking box. Again, it's a cardboard box, but it has some very unique features. It appears to be very strong, very durable, and it also has a mounting system in the box itself so that there's far less disassembly that needs to be done with this product, the Air Caddy, versus any of the others that we've talked about. So links to all of these are in the show notes, and I hope that you will find those useful. Now, one of the other things that you can do, of course, is you can go to your local bike shop. You know, bike shops are getting new bikes in all the time. Bikes don't come assembled, they come in a shipping box, and that's the way they came from China or Taiwan or Wisconsin or wherever your bike was manufactured. And once the bike has been built up by the shop, they have usually no use for the shipping box that it came in. So with a little planning, you can go to your local bike shop, let them know that you're going to be traveling in a couple of weeks and that you'd like them to save a box for you. And even if they charge you a couple of bucks, hey, it's a free case that you can use to ship your bike. Now, it's not going to offer as much protection as any of the other products that we just talked about, but it certainly is a quick and cheap and dirty way of you getting a case for your bike. Just remember, probably not as much protection as you might like for your $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 bike if that's what you've got, so keep that in mind. One of the things that often intimidates people about shipping their bike or taking their bike with them on a trip is they're a bit intimidated about the disassembly process. I found a great video on YouTube, and I put a link to it in the show notes about bicycle disassembly. I recommend that if it's something that you're intimidated about doing, go ahead and check out that video. It takes very, very simple tools and just a little bit of planning in order to do it. And then, of course, reassembly is just the reverse of what you did in disassembly. There are still a lot of people who are intimidated about doing this, and so most local bike shops will also offer a disassembly service. They may charge you $20, $25 to do it. My recommendation would be stand there and watch them do it. Watch how they put it in the bike box and how they take it apart. And another tip might be bring your digital camera with you. Take pictures all along the process so that when it comes time to reassemble your bike, not only did you watch them do it, but if you forgot something, go to your computer, go to your digital camera and check out those pictures. And now you'll be able to know, it'll be like your own comic strip, your own instruction manual telling you how to reassemble your bike. And if you don't want to do any of the process, take your bike to your local dealer. Again, they'll be happy to do the complete disassembly, make a deal with a dealer on the other end, and I'm sure that they'll be happy to do the reassembly and then the disassembly again when you get ready to ship it home. Okay, so let's say that you've decided that you now are ready to go on your trip and you've decided, I'm going to bring my bike with me on the airline. Well, hopefully you thought about this when you made your trip plans, because as I said earlier, the cost for bringing your bike on the airplane will vary from airline to airline. But if you are a member of USA Cycling and you've made your reservation on United Airlines, you may be in luck, because according to USA Cycling's website, every USA Cycling member gets 2 vouchers per year that will allow you to bring your bike on a United Airlines flight for free, 1 voucher each way. So that's a full round trip. If you're only going on 1 trip a year, this may be a worthwhile investment for you to join USA Cycling and get those vouchers and use them on your 1 trip a year that you're going to bring your bike. So there's a tip that might save you some money in the long run when it comes to traveling with your bike. Well, maybe you've decided that instead you want to ship your bike, but that you don't want to take the time and effort to go from website to website to website to find the best rate from Chicago to Timbuktu for shipping your bike. In researching this story, I found 2 companies who specialize in shipping sporting equipment, and in one case specifically bikes, and they will make all the arrangements for you. And I believe that part of their job is to find you the best price. So one is called Sports Express, and the other is called Ship Bikes. Again, I haven't tried either of these services, so I'd love to hear if any of you did, and I will follow up on a subsequent Fredcast to let everyone know about your experience in using these 2 services. But I have put links in the show notes to each of these companies, as well as all of the other companies and all of the other things that I've just talked about. I hope that you will consider traveling with your bike. When I've done it, whether it's for work or on a family vacation, I have found that it has been just another great way to enjoy my vacation. And as we all know, cycling is a great way to get to know an area and to see places that you might not normally see from a car or from a train. And so I hope you will consider traveling with your bike. And when you're out there, I hope you'll use some of these tips I've just given you. And of course, every time that you're out there riding, I hope that you enjoy your rides. Okay, before we go tonight, just a couple of shout-outs. I know it's been a long show, but having taken a week off, I had a lot to say. First of all, I want to send a shout-out to listener Gary in Qatar. And it was great getting his email because, you know, sometimes I get emails like this and they make doing the Fredcast just that much more worthwhile, because Gary started cycling about 4 years ago when his doctor told him he needed to lose a little bit of weight and to help cure his hypertension. And he did. He started riding and it was great. But then he ended up moving abroad to Qatar for work and he really wasn't able to cycle anymore and started putting the pounds back on. He wasn't feeling quite as good as he was when he was cycling. And what's really cool is that he was, as he puts it, he was fiddling around with his iPod one day, had learned about podcasts, trying to find out what the whole big deal was with podcasting. He came across the Fredcast, started listening, and now he's back on his bike, and he's slowly losing some of that weight that he lost earlier, and he's crediting the show with that. And Gary, I just want to say to you, keep riding. You really inspired me and made me feel really good in that the Fredcast is making a difference in listeners' lives. I really appreciate that. I think it's fantastic. So keep doing what you're doing, and thanks for riding. Next shout out goes to listener Chris in Dallas, and he said the usual things about how he feels about my podcast, and then he went on to say this, and I thought that this was a really great comment and something that is often missing in all this bad news when it comes to doping and cycling. And he says, "As much as I love your podcast, I must get something off my chest. When so many are criticizing cycling in the wake of seemingly endless doping revelations, saying it is becoming like boxing or pro wrestling, they're losing sight of one fact. With or without doping, the guys we idolize are light years beyond the rest of us in their fitness and riding skills. Maybe they feel like they need some performance-enhancing substance to compete with each other, but they're still in a stratosphere that the rest of us will never achieve. As I turn a big crank of 52 with a cog of 12 or 13 on a downhill and can't keep it up on flat, they turn a 55-11 with their huge thigh muscles and incredible aerobic capacity. They train 5 to 6 hours a day. They're superhuman. Maybe some of them feel they must dope to gain an edge over their competition, and that's a shame, but nonetheless, they are superhuman with or without performance enhancers. I can still be in awe of their natural talents that come from years of pain and hours in the saddle. We can still find something to admire in their abilities. I truly believe that the doping will sort itself out." I hope he's right, by the way. "At least our sport tests without prejudice. We catch them and they pay. But nevertheless, they are the gods of our sport, and I, for one, remain in awe of their abilities, even if the masses are not educated enough about our sport to see it." So I thought that was kind of a nice sentiment that he put there. Thanks, Chris, for sending it along. And finally, I want to send a shout out to Michael in San Francisco. Michael emailed me a while back, and he had some ideas about what WADA and USADA and the UCI might be able to do to help protect against a situation where, let's say Floyd Landis is completely innocent, where you catch an innocent cyclist because of flaws in the testing that goes on. And he sent some great suggestions. And I, in my reply to him in my email, I encouraged him to write to WADA and the UCI and the USADA. And he did. And Michael, I want to give you props for that and say kudos to you for doing that. I think that it is our sport. No, we're not out there in the pro peloton for 3 weeks in the Tour de France, but cycling isn't just about professional cyclists. It's about all of us that put on the Lycra and put on those funny shoes and go out in wind and rain and hail and sunshine and ride. And some of this doping stuff is giving our sport a bad name. And if we can give a tip, give a suggestion, I think that we should do that to help give back to the sport. And so, Michael, congratulations to you for doing that. I think that you are definitely on the right track. And by the way, as I told you earlier, I interviewed the gentleman who's the publisher of DailyPeloton.com, and he told me that one of the things that they're going to be doing is opening up their forums to suggestions from riders like you to give suggestions on changes that can be made to the system to make it fairer and more foolproof. So I'd encourage all of you, Michael especially, to engage in that dialogue for the betterment of the entire sport. So thanks, Michael, for writing, and to everybody for writing. I love getting your emails. And that brings me to my typical ending of the show. I love it when you contact me. Please do so. The best way to do it is to send me an email. The email is thefredcast@gmail.com, and your email can be text, or you can send me an audio comment. Just if you're going to send me an audio comment, let me know whether or not it's okay to use it on the show. If you want to send audio comments in another way, you can use our voicemail line. You can reach that at area code 206-203-F R-E-D. And there's a final way to send an audio comment, and you'll find it on the left-hand side of the website. Click the button where it says send me an audio comment, and using your own computer and the audio software on the web, I will get your audio comment. And that, by the way, is how I got Paolo's comment about the Giro di Lombardia. Also, of course, go to the Fredcast forums. We talked about that earlier. You can find those on the website. And of course, there's a link in the show notes. Finally, I appreciate it when you go out and you vote for us on Podcast Alley. It brings more listeners, and it also helps me with these companies when I'm trying to get them to send us product for review. So please, there's a link in the show notes. There's also one on the website at www.thefredcast.com. Go there and vote for the show. I do not get any money out of that, as somebody asked me in an email, but it only helps all of us on the show. Finally, as we do every week, PodSafe Cycling Music. Tonight's music comes to us from a Fredcast listener, listener Bob, who sent in a suggestion for a song that was on the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. Tonight's song is called Quiet Man in a Loud Shirt. And according to Bob, the quiet man represents a cyclist moving along without the noise of a motor, and the loud shirt is a bit of a poke at all of the over-the-top colorful jerseys that we wear. So, Bob, thanks for sending in the music. I hope that you're getting something out of the show, and I hope that all of you, if you like the music, will let Bob know and support independent musicians who support podcasting. It is a circle that we all have going on here, and I think everybody deserves the support. So if you like Bob's music, please let him know. That's going to do it for the Fredcast for tonight. I will see you all next week. Thank you for listening. Thank you for staying subscribed. Please enjoy Bob's music, but most of all, enjoy the ride.